This is Twit.
So let's go ahead and move into the bites. This is actually an interesting one and a bit scary for any person who wears or needs modern day medical devices. We've talked about this topic with some of our previous guests in the past and how some of the devices don't actually need to be connected to the internet. Does our CPAP machines or juicers or thermometers really need to be connected to the information superhighway? Well, back in episode 223, we talked about how St. Jude Medical patched their pacemakers, causing a vulnerability that was later reported by researchers at MedSec Holdings, and the public was ultimately warned by the Homeland Security Department. The trans murder in question sends data back to the medical professionals, and it was actually exploited. Security researchers firm Whitescope recently conducted research and found similarities amongst multiple of the pacemaker devices. One similarity was that all the devices were connected with external monitoring devices, which send medical data back to doctors. And second, all of the devices had the ability for doctors to adjust and reprogram the devices with just adjusting some of the purposes. With their research, they found that after reviewing 7 pacemaker products from 4 different vendors, they were able to find 10 security vulnerabilities that most of them shared, and then also found that from the components that they're actually made up of, basically included 8,600 security flaws. So some of their issues that they found were, one, the monitoring device or management device, if it was stolen, someone could use it to connect to any pacemaker the manufacturer supported due to a universal authentication token, allowing for someone to actually connect and receive data, block data back and forth from the device, from pretty much any device as soon as they connect to it. That's the most disturbing part, because not only does it allow you to get data, it also allows you potentially reprogram the device, and which could cause harm and or kill a person. Another issue was that researchers found pacemakers don't actually block unnecessary adjustments. So certain facets of the pacemaker really shouldn't be able to be adjusted in any way. Like, for instance, shutting it down. They should essentially be whitelisting that functionality and only allowing certain necessary functions to be adjusted. Another big issue was the pacemaker systems actually have little to no authentication in this built into the system. So when connecting to the device, doctors actually could do it without even entering a password. So I guess this kind of points out one particular thing. Cheaper, what do you think? Do we really need devices, especially things like this, to be actually connected to the internet? Because, you know, closed circuit communication and other techniques have been used for pretty much many years in the past for devices where, you know, you didn't actually need to be connected to the internet. Where should we be limiting this?
I do have a little bit of experience. I was put on a Holter monitor for a little while, so because they suspected I might have had a increased problem with a heart valve. And so I had a conversation with the cardiologist. He says, yeah, it's not perfect. Things change under different conditions, and that's why they need this constant feedback loop. You know, they'll look at the EKG off the pacemaker itself and see what the heck is going on, and then they like to be able to send adjustments, and they don't want to have to wait until the next time the patient comes back into the office. Now, my bone of contention with this is a lot of these companies are just using off-the-shelf toolkits. Think of it as, you know, someone taking out Lego and not really understanding how the pieces really fit together. You know, maybe it's not strong enough or things like that, you know, if we're going to use the Lego analogy. Well, the companies that are building this aren't really understanding the security features of the toolkits, and they're just kind of slapping them together, which tells me that maybe, just maybe, they might want to consider stop being so cheap and hire some real programmers that have some security experience. Right, JJ? You know, I know JJ is looking for a job. And the reality is that is an industry trend that I'm seeing over and over and over again. I see it in a lot of Internet of Things. I see it in power management. I see it in a lot of different little devices that people put out. We definitely saw that in webcams. So I think maybe, just maybe, as much as I hate the concept, the world started making CPAs have to go for certification. Maybe it's time we start thinking about the same thing for programmers, before they're allowed to work on anything that's life-threatening. What do you think, Lou?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting part. I mean, you pointed out a lot of the parts that they're using, they're just, like you said, off the shelf. You can get them anywhere. You can buy them on eBay if you wanted to. You can buy them in the parts stores. And I can – it's kind of a – it's a huge process to kind of put these things together. You would think that medical devices, I don't know, are there specific type of certification processes, especially for medical devices that are connected to networks?
Well, as far as I know, the devices themselves have to be certified by the FDA. But just like everybody thinks that the HIPAA regulations specify what kinds of firewalls and things you have to use – or, you know, PCI for credit card. No, all it says is, you know, an industry acceptable level of protection is basically what it says. And the unfortunate thing is the entire industry has not set minimal standards. Like, for instance, anyone can say that they're producing an enterprise grade firewall. And the reality is, a lot of those enterprise-grade firewalls, when I did testing for InfoWorld a long, long time ago, couldn't stop even the standard catalog of cert attacks. And that was only from the outside. The second I turned it inside out, say like someone had an infection from a kid's laptop that went into a corporation, so an inside attack – a lot of these enterprise-grade firewalls were like tissue paper with attacks from the inside. The same kind of thing is happening with a lot of these medical devices. They're concentrate on the medicine, which, God bless them, that's what they really should be. But they really and truly need to bring in security specialists as part of the design process, because the security on a lot of these devices is tissue paper. You know, just look, you know, go into any kind of cardiac monitor, and anyone that's even just reasonably good at, say, a toolkit like Metasploit can break into that cardiac monitoring device. It's too easy. And so when you start putting it up against nation state actors, you know, we don't have a chance. So congressional leaders, a lot of you guys have pacemakers. What happens if a nation state decides to go and cause every single member of Congress that has a pacemaker to have a heart attack during session? Think about that for a while. And absolutely. Why don't we start thinking about building some better standards for medical security devices?
Yeah, I agree. I think just recently I was reading a paper. You know, I do a lot of IoT work with my son outside of work, and you know, just recently, Nokia actually published a paper on what they call machine-to-machine communication. And essentially, it outlines really some interesting principles that manufacturers should be taking to secure the devices, as well as just the communication between the devices. So, for instance, some of the points that they point out is that the devices need a secure or immutable identity. And what does that mean? Well, it means that the identity of the device can't change because it's burned into the hardware of the device. So, for instance, an IMEI in a phone or a VIN on a car or something that actually identifies the device in a secure way, either software or hardware based, and a token, for instance, like stores keys and certificates securely on the device. So, an example would be that universal integrated circuit, like a smart card or a chipset that Intel has identity protection. Also, there's a software base where basically digital certs can be secured as immutable key storage. So, second in their document, it also talks about how devices require secure communication channels for management. So, obviously, we know what that means. It means that management of the services or gateways that actually talk to the device need to basically ensure confidentiality of the data going between the two and the integrity of the data. And the way they can do that is using encryption standards like HTTP and LTLS. Also, between non-cellular devices and gateways, DTLS can be used to pre-share keys or use tokens or X509 public keys or raw public keys to ensure data confidentiality of communication. And third, they actually call out that the devices need trusted software environment. And that means that the low-level packages like the firmware needs to be secured, and it needs to be in an immutable device identifier in order to ensure that when it's actually communicating the data and actually updating the firmware, it's done in a more secure way. And it upholds the kind of the device, the gateway integrity, and it can also secure the digest or hash algorithm by using that. It secures it and can be used to ensure that the transmitted data is actually not tampered with. And finally, they call out device availability. And that means that the device and its gateway should be protected from its malicious activity. Like, for instance, it should protect itself from DDoS attacks. When the management server gateways can collaborate, there's continuous monitoring. So, for instance, there's alarms and alerts. This way they have the ability to shut down the device and or the gateway to prevent malicious devices from affecting the network. And, of course, triggering proactive actions to correct the problem system-wide. So, and they also call out something interesting, and I've never heard this before, but they also call out some standards that are actually out there for machine-to-machine devices from the Open Mobile Alliance. For instance, they have a specification called the Device Management Specification, which basically enables protocols for creating secure communication channels. Also, they talk about gateway management and device classification and also how to use lightweight protocols for smaller devices like sensors and actuators and controllers. So, I mean, Cheebert, is this something that we should be pushing? Is these more towards standards and then also certifying these standards as these devices come out? I think we've talked about it before.
Yeah, it's there's been lots of conversations about this type of thing. I've certainly heard the National Institute of Standards and Technology talking about this. The power industry has certainly talked about this. Just look inside any major organization that has desktop computers and just take a good hard look. How many TPM devices are actually enabled on those desktops? I would say very few. And the other thing is, look at UEFA instead of a BIOS, where you put digital signatures on the hard drives. Right. It's going to be a long, rocky road to get these standards adopted. And as much as I hate government oversight in my industry, because I think we've done pretty good by ourselves, I think this might be someplace where the industry needs kind of a push from Congress. Maybe, I don't know, I hate saying that, but, we need some sort of impetus, some sort of push to get more secure machine-to-machine communication, because sooner or later, it's going to cost us some lives.